From Maine Public Radio and MainePublic.org, I'm Nora Flaherty, bringing you the news on This Day in Maine, Monday, August 20th, 2018. And on this day, as Maine school buildings age and communities change, schools are updating their campuses. But some are finding that's costing a lot more than they expected, and that's a major obstacle. That's ahead in just a moment.
This Day in Maine is made possible by listeners like you and by Norway Savings, supporting the colorful vision of Maine's business owners. Live your life in color. NorwaySavings.bank.
Maine's Government Oversight Committee has unanimously endorsed a watchdog agency's report on the state's steep enrollment decline in TANF, Temporary Assistance for Needy Families. Members of the committee questioned Acting DHHS Commissioner Bethany Hamm as to why the state had stockpiled program savings when the child poverty rate is at about 17%. Hamm told the committee the state had to ensure new spending priorities met federal regulations.
Now, you will see a greater level of spending.
Since fiscal year 2013, the state has accrued about $143 million in savings in the TANF program after tightening eligibility requirements. The report from the Office of Program Evaluation and Government Accountability found that Maine is operating within federal requirements, but recommends greater transparency in how it makes its spending decisions. That same agency today also says it found no evidence that Republican Governor Paula Page diverted shipments of timber to punish two lumber mill owners who had publicly criticized his opposition to tariffs on Canadian softwood. But the report also acknowledged that investigators could not find a paper trail to document the LePage administration's rationale for diverting the timber. Nevertheless, the governor insulted the lawmaker who requested the investigation during a fiery exchange that ended when LePage stormed out of today's meeting by the Government Oversight Committee. Steve Missler has that story.
The 12-page report by the Office of Program Evaluation and Government Accountability, or OPEGA, was based on interviews with state officials, including Governor LePage, who has been repeatedly criticized for heavy-handed efforts to punish political adversaries. And it was precisely that reputation that prompted some lawmakers to question whether the governor had directed Doug Denico of the Maine Forest Service to divert timber shipments from mills owned by Jason and Chris Brochu in February. The Brochus had sharply criticized the governor for pursuing a Canada First agenda when he came out against new tariffs on Canadian softwood imposed by the Trump administration. But LePage has forcefully denied that his administration sought vengeance against the Brochus, as he did again on Monday after telling the Government Oversight Committee that the OPEGA report had exonerated him.
My only issue here today is to say that I am telling you did not divert any wood, and I never would have, and it's repulsive. I am a person who does not need to go behind people's backs.
LePage then suggested that Republican State Senator Tom Saviello, one of the governor's frequent critics, had fabricated events in order to gin up support for the OPEGA investigation. Saviello hit back.
First of all, I don't fabricate anything. That's not my title. I just deal with the
facts. You've been doing it for 8 years, sir.
I'm not going to argue with you, Governor, okay. And I'm not going to be intimidated by your insinuations.
Republican State Senator Roger Cates, co-chair of the Oversight Committee, stepped in to try and ease tensions between LePage and Saviello. It didn't work.
Governor, I just want to say that as far as anything I have seen, no one has accused you of doing anything.
Bull.
The governor stopped short of completing the expletive, but he again turned his attention to Saviello.
This man over here is the most repugnant human being I've ever seen in my life.
Governor, you're respectfully, sir, you're out of order.
Thank you.
The governor then stormed out of the meeting. And while he seemed to believe that he has prevailed over the timber controversy, it appears likely to follow him, at least until September. Several lawmakers suggested that OPEGA's report left many questions unanswered. The agency was able to obtain over 6,300 LePage administration emails, but outgoing director Beth Ashcroft said very few of them shed light on the decision to divert timber away from mills owned by the Brochus. Ashcroft said the dearth of documents wasn't necessarily unusual. Even though the state receives millions of dollars for the sale of wood on public lands, $4 million last year, there isn't much of a paper trail to document some transactions that are largely done over the phone or in person.
What we saw was that there wasn't what I would call standard operating procedure.
That part of the OPEGA report was overshadowed by LePage's comments which drew a sharp rebuke from Senator Cates, who said the governor's conduct was inappropriate.
And in my view, unworthy of the chief executive of the state of Maine.
Before abruptly leaving the meeting, the governor demanded an apology. He left with lawmakers on the Oversight Committee not only asking one of him, but also voting to continue their probe. The committee hopes to interview several state officials and mill owners during its next meeting in September. And in the case of LePage officials, who have repeatedly spurned voluntary requests to appear before the committee, subpoenas are possible, if not likely. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Steve Missler.
Minors under the age of 18 have a few less restrictions on the types of jobs they can do under changes announced today by the Maine Department of Labor. The new rules govern hazardous occupations for minors in non-agricultural employment. Among the changes, easing state restrictions to allow 17-year-olds to drive for work-related businesses, but only under very specific circumstances and conditions. Teens who are 16 and 17 are no longer prohibited from working alone in a cash-based business. They're also allowed to perform soldering and welding in certain circumstances. It's now okay for 14 and 15-year-olds to cook in places like soda fountains, lunch counters, and cafeterias. A new restriction prohibits minors under the age of 18 from working in the marijuana industry. The changes in Maine are designed to align state rules with federal standards. Finally today, with aging buildings and changes in population, school districts around Maine are modernizing their campuses. But some of those projects are costing more than expected. As Robbie Feinberg reports, more competition and a shortage of labor have led some project costs to increase by 30% or more.
So we're actually going up to the back side of the stage here.
Yarmouth Superintendent Andrew Dolliff weaves through a maze of chairs, desks, and concrete hallways into the cramped band room at Yarmouth Elementary School. Music stands and instruments fill up the space, with little room to actually teach. The school has 80 students in band, yet Dolliff and Principal Ryan Gleason say less than half can fit in here at a time.
So this room's 400 square feet. It's the size of a decent living room, probably, and you'll have, you know, two dozen students in here, dozen and a half to two dozen students in here with their instruments.
And we have a social worker who next year is actually going to need to share this space.
It is interesting. How many schools do you go in where you've got a band room / social worker's office?
Dolliff says Yarmouth Elementary is close to bursting at the seams. Student enrollment in the district was about 1,400 in 2008. According to projections, it could reach nearly 2,000 within the next decade.
And although our facilities are in good shape, they're not large enough. We're already at capacity in three of our facilities and about to be at capacity in the fourth.
Over the past year, a district committee formed a plan to deal with for about $35 million, the district would expand three of its schools, including Yarmouth Elementary. Yet when estimates on the project came in this spring,
the estimates actually came in over $60 million because we did the estimates within the past month and a half or so, and construction costs have just increased significantly.
And those increased costs, sometimes as much as 30% more than expected, are affecting the way cities and towns approach construction of new schools.
But right now, I could tell you that, it is a concern.
Matt Marks is the CEO of Associated General Contractors of Maine. Marks says rising costs are the result of a perfect storm of issues affecting the construction industry. New tariffs on steel and aluminum, for one. And there's the effect on labor from competing projects totaling hundreds of millions of dollars from organizations like Colby College and Maine Medical Center. Mark says with so many options and few skilled laborers available, some contractors don't need to bid for large school projects.
You look at some of the schools where we had two bidders or even one bidder, And certainly a lot of that driven by skilled workers, but also some of the competitive nature of what's happening in the private market.
The problem has been more drastic outside of the Portland area. In Camden, the school district has worked for years to construct a middle school for an expected $22 million. Yet when Superintendent Maria Libby opened the bids in May, the lowest was nearly $5 million over budget.
I was definitely disappointed in opening those envelopes because I knew that that was problematic.
Residents ultimately approved the new plan in June, but not before encountering resistance from some residents and city councilors who didn't like the uncertainty for taxpayers. Similar problems occurred in a largely state-funded elementary school project planned in Caribou. The project received only one construction bid, and it was $12 million over budget. State officials say depending on the market, they may look into other construction delivery methods for future projects. And Matt Marks with the Associated General Contractors of Maine doesn't see construction easing up anytime soon.
I mean, if people think that the, you know, the private market is getting softer or people are holding back on development, you could see a lot more competitiveness in schools too. But for the foreseeable future, I can tell you that there is a tremendous amount of work coming out the door next year and the year after, it looks like.
As for the renovation in Yarmouth, the district scaled back its project from $60 million to $52 million. That's still far higher than projected, though. So Superintendent Andrew Dolliff says the town will offer residents two questions on a ballot referendum in November to approve one $40 million renovation, as well as another $12 million project that's not quite as urgent. Dolliff acknowledges that it's a lot to ask of taxpayers.
That's a real concern for us. We want to make sure that we're sensitive to that.
And it's why the town is leaving it up to voters to decide in November. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Robbie Feinberg.
And education reporting on Maine Public Radio, supported by a grant from the Nellie Mae Education Foundation. For more of today's Maine news, visit our website, mainepublic.org. And from Maine Public, that's This Day in Maine for Monday, August 20th, 2018. Thanks to Ed Morin and our digital team, I'm Nora Flaherty.